And what is going on, yo? Welcome back to Conspiracy Fears and Mysteries. And I'm your host, Ralphie. And I hope y'all been having a, well, I don't know if I hope y'all just been safe and good, man. Because things are crazy out here. Things are crazy. Been getting crazy. And I've been on a hiatus for a while, but a little bit. I'm recording from the car. My wife's at the doctor's office doing some doctor stuff. And I'm waiting in the car. And it's hot in Florida, even though it is December. I mean, I'm sorry, it's November. December, I wish this year was over already. November 18, 2020. And that's the day of this recording of this podcast. And it is hot in my car. And I'm still recording a podcast because I said I would be back this week. So when this gets uploaded, guys, it's probably going to be on Friday. So today's the 18th. So it'll probably be uploaded on the 20th, which is Friday. So when you're hearing this, it'll be the 20th. That's when I'll put it out for you guys to hear it. But I'm recording it on the 18th inside my car, which is why you hear all that stuff in the back or whatever it is that you hear. I have the windows rolled up, and thank God it's not that hot, but it's still hot where it gets hot in the car. So I'm doing this for y'all because I don't have time to be at the house right now. All this election stuff and COVID mess, whatever the hell is going on there. At least it's not New York, man. I was in New York, just to give you a little back, little story about what I've been doing. I was in New York, went to visit family, and New York's freaking nuts, man. After living in Florida for a couple of years and then going back to New York, you realize that you just want to be home. And it doesn't matter where your house is, where your home is, whether it's Florida or it's wherever. But I grew up in New York, okay? But it's just crazy. With the COVID thing, it's even crazier. And oh, my God, they're out of control over there, man. I don't know what's going on in New York, man. You guys are, you know, that's my city. It's where I grew up. But damn, I don't know. New York, get your shit right, man. Get your shit right. So today we're going to talk about the sausage killer. I had another story. But guess what happens? I use my Murder Minute app. I'm going to read off the stuff off the Murder Minute app. I started to take notes last night, fell asleep in the middle of it, and it was another story. And the thing is, I didn't realize when you read it, I don't know the way it works in the Murder Minute app, but the stories leave, like they're gone. And I was looking for that particular serial killer. It was really interesting, this guy, what he was doing. And but I'll go ahead and look for it again. But today we're going to talk about the sausage killer, Stuart Alexander. And this story was written with four Murder Minute by Hugh Thomas, which is H-U-W. I don't know how you say that name. He wrote this. I'm just reading off and giving my insight, passing it along to you guys. Hugh Thomas, he wrote about this, so he did the research for this. A lot of my stories, I read them off and I give my two cents. And it's the first time that I'm listening to them. Some of the stories, I do my own research. And I'll give it to you. This one is from Hugh Thomas. And it kind of pulled this one out of the hat because, like I said, I lost the one I did yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, let's go ahead and read about Stuart Alexander, the Sausage King. So, Stuart Alexander was a Sausage King, like I said. And his family ran a factory making traditional products that everybody loved across the state. But Stuart had a growing paranoia, and which led him to make poor business decisions, which threw the family into chaos. And a vendetta against the federal meat inspectors boiled over into some violence. Now, this is his story of how he became a murderer. That's crazy. So the Santos Liguica factory was located in San Leandro, California. It was a thriving family business. The Alexander family could trace their cultural heritage back to Portugal, the home of the Linguica sausage. Now, the Linguica is a smoke-cured pork sausage, in case you were wondering, influenced with a garlic and paprika seasoning. I'm a big lover of different meats and different sausages, but So, like most cured meats, the recipe is very traditional. The Lungica sausage has been made in Portugal and Brazil for hundreds of years, almost always following the exact same method. The meat could be smoked at a certain temperature and then seasoned and yada, 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 with a carefully cultivated selection of herbs and spices. And it's served either on its own or with rice and beans. Yeah, I love rice and beans. Jesus. So it's a cultural delicacy, right? Needless to say, and it's delicious. And I got pictures of it. I wish I could show it to you. Now, the Alexander family made their name selling much-loved homemade Lungica sausage. Their San Leandro factory had a reputation for making the best Lungica for hundreds of miles. And the factory was a family business. And for years, it had been run by Herman Tweedy Alexander. Tweedy Alexander was a real character in the local community. In San Leandro, everyone knew about the Lungica factory and the family who ran it. Eventually, Tweedy earned the nickname the Sausage King, thanks to the delicious products that he made. The Alexander family consisted of Tweedy and his wife, Shirley, as well as their three sons. The eldest son was Stefan, then came Stuart, and then finally Stanley. As the patriarch of a sausage empire, Tweedy was well-liked in the area and was determined to see his family succeed for generations. Now, the boys worked regularly in the factory, getting to know the family business. But it was Stefan who received the majority of Tweedy's attention. Stefan was groomed from a young age, destined to one day take over the factory and run it like his dad. Now, all throughout his teenage years, Stefan was told that one day the entire Lungica sausage kingdom would be his. Stuart watched on from the sidelines, and he was the middle son. His father doted on Stefan, and his mother doted on Stanley. Stuart was left caught between both. You know, I don't care what parents say, you know you have a favorite. I mean, you don't have a favorite, but you do have a favorite, you know. Now, when Stuart did visit the factory, he often made mistakes. Mistakes in the factory could be dangerous, and even worse, they could slow down production. Every time Stuart made a mistake, Tweedy shouted at him. Over time, a kernel of resentment buried deep inside Stuart began to grow and grow. Eventually, he would be determined to prove his worth to his father. Now, tragedy struck the family in 1977 when Stefan, still only 18 years old, was killed in a motorcycle accident. That's crazy. After a lifetime of being groomed to take over, Stefan was gone. Kind of mysterious there, but whatever. The Sausage King suddenly found himself without an heir. So he turned to Stuart. Now, after years on the sidelines, Stuart Alexander was now in a position to take over the family business. Now, Tweedy had no choice but to begin training Stuart to run the factory, even if he had little faith in the middle son. The years of verbal abuse, the years of telling Stuart that he'd never amount to anything, the years of burning resentment of the son toward the father, it was all going to endanger the future of the family business. Tweedy couldn't let that happen. He tried to repair the relationship between the two of them. The rocky history between father and son was made more complicated after the divorce of Tweedy and Shirley. Stuart had only been 10 years old at the time, and the divorce only fed into his resentment. But Stuart was finally the golden child, next in line to inherit the kingdom. Tweedy began to train him in the ways of the family business, trying to rush through years of education that had been spent on Stefan. And Stuart Alexander resented his father. Even as he was next in line to take over the family business, he began to exhibit a string of personality traits which made people kind of suspicious. And now, those who knew Stuart at the time remember him as having a short fuse and a combative personality. It was not uncommon for Stuart to threaten people. Growing up in his father's shadow, he developed a reputation for making death threats against those who angered him. Now, Let's look at these threats to see exactly what it was that he did, so we kind of have a bigger picture of what he did. So people who knew Stuart Alexander described him as a man with anger issues. Richard Miller of Lafayette, who ran a printing business near the sausage factory, remember that Stuart didn't like being told what to do. He described Stuart as a very anti-authority person. In 96, Stuart got into an argument with an elderly neighbor named Clifford Berg. And after the argument, he became, after the argument became heated, Stuart lunged for Berg. The police eventually charged him with beating the 75-year-old man. Stewart took over the San Lingüica factory, and he was proud of his products and worked very hard. Tweety Alexander cast a long shadow over Stewart. Perhaps the reason why Stewart worked so hard was that he was always trying to impress his father, even after Tweety died. Now, that deep psychological desire to prove himself and to succeed in the family business seemed to be one of Stewart's most driving characteristics. There was also his anti-authority streak that he had that we just spoke about. Being raised by Tweety Alexander could not have been easy. Tweety often verbally abused his second-born son, especially when Stewart made mistakes. Now, this anger and abuse from an authority figure seemed to have a big impression on Stewart. Whenever he came up against any kind of authority, his natural instinct was to fight back. Even when he finally became the Sausage King, Stewart was not happy. Stewart's relationship with the authorities was complicated. You can imagine somebody who doesn't like to take orders is probably not going to like government at all, or any kind of police or anything. Now, as well as the psychological scars from his childhood, he worked in a business with a lot of oversight. The meat compliance officers were a regular fixture in San Lingüica factory, just like they were in every meat processing factory across the country. Because of the manufacturing process behind sausage, there's a lot that can go wrong. From the ingredients to the machines to the methods, everything has to be checked and double-checked by authorities. If the checks aren't carried out correctly, or if the manufacturer is cutting corners, people can get sick. But to Stewart, any criticism from the meat compliance officers was an extension of the harsh words he'd received from his father. So this time it was a different authority figure telling him what to do. Stewart transferred a large amount of resentment he felt toward his father to the federal agency. And Stewart regularly kept the emails he received from the authorities. Along with the letters that came from the government, he'd mock the messages, pointing each one out to his secretary and his mother. He'd hold up the letters and emails and examples of targeted harassment. Stewart had no trust or faith in the authorities at all. Now, despite his troubles with the meat compliance officers, the business was thriving. The quality of the products and the excellent institution that Tweety had built over the years kept the money going. The community had come to accept the passing of the torch between the generations, and Stewart Alexander took on the title of the Sausage King. The success brought a lot of cachet into the community. As the owner of one of the most successful factories, Stewart had a lot of political capital. He followed in his father's footsteps, becoming a civic figure. At one point, Stewart tried to parlay into a run for a political office, and he tried to become a mayor of San Leandro in 1988, but he failed. His campaign was targeted, in part, against the federal oversight, which was always sent the meat compliance officers to his factory. As well as financial successes, Stewart began to find romantic success, too. He dated a number of women, even though he was a very busy man. One woman, an insurance claims agent named Eve Elder, dated Stewart for a number of years. The more time they spent together, the more she noticed that his strange habits and fascination with violence, as well as writing violent short stories about the meat inspectors that he shared with Eve. And there were other sins at Stewart's potential for violence. Charlotte Knapp dated Stewart on and off for like a few years, and she remembered how Stewart would launch into profanity-laden rants about the meat inspectors. The language he used shocked her. Needless to say, I mean, this guy didn't like her, so he would probably be cursing his ass off and say, "I'm gonna kill these bastards," all that, whatever. But his violent intentions weren't just limited to the meat inspectors. And this is one thing, as I said, people got to know how to control their anger, how to control their emotions, their feeling, because this is what leads to incidents. Is over-emotional men, over-emotional women, just over-emotional people. Now, anyone who Stewart perceived to be interfering with his work was considered a trespasser, and Stewart developed a habit for chasing these trespassers from his factory, shouting and swearing at them as they ran. On one occasion, he brandished a gun. Stewart kept several firearms in a drawer in his office desk. He took the gun and chased a trespasser from the factory grounds. Now, Charlotte was shocked. Over time, four particular inspectors drew the brunt of Stewart's persona, whatever. He became increasingly irritated and antagonistic. Oh, my goodness. When Stewart refused to replace some machinery, the inspectors temporarily shut down the factory. Now, this wreaked havoc with the profitability of the business. Stewart was losing a ton of money. And one person, when they're already hinged like that on the edge, and now you're making them lose money, that just goes overboard. I mean, they can go overboard easily. One time he ordered that the factory should be reopened against the law. The inspector shut him down again. Stewart was beginning to lose all control over his life, driven mad by what he considered was a campaign of harassment by the authorities. And there were other figures in his life criticizing him too. People like Eve and his mother would tell him to slow down, to stop spending so much on his lavish lifestyle. That's another thing. I guess he spent a lot of money on his lifestyle. You know, he liked to buy lavish things and just look like he made a lot of money. And that's the problem with a lot of people. You know, you're drawing attention to yourself too. But the Sausage King refused to stop. Stewart was driving himself further and further into debt. The factory closures, the change of machinery, and his own terrible decisions were costing him a great deal of money. Stewart took out a bank loan to try to alleviate the problem, but that did nothing to help. The Santos Luguica factory, once one of the area's most thriving businesses, was now operating illegally and losing a large amount of money. Stewart's response was to work even more, to drive himself harder and harder in pursuit of success. Perhaps it was his determination to prove himself to his new dead father, or perhaps it was driven insane by the battle against the authorities, but Stewart began to lose composure. His relationship fell apart, his business fell further and further into debt, and his family, who tried to help him, were driven further and further away. At one point, Stewart decided to hang a sign outside the factory. "To all of our great customers," this is what the sign read. The sign explained, "The USDA is coming into our plant harassing my employees and me, making it impossible to make our great product. Gee, if all my meat would be in a business for 79 years without any complaint, the meat inspectors would not have jobs. Therefore, we are taking legal action against them." But the sign did nothing to stop the problems with the business. On 21 June, the year 2000, the meat inspectors arrived at the factory again. There were four of them: Gene Hillary, 56, Tom Quadros, Bill, who was 52, Bill Shaylin, 57, and Earl Willis, 51. Bill Shaylin was the state inspector brought in by the others to oversee what was quickly becoming the most difficult inspection in San Leandro. They expected difficulty in dealing with the 39-year-old Stewart, and the Sausage King's reputation preceded him. The inspectors arrived at the factory, and as usual, Stewart began to shout at them. He claimed they were harassing him, and they were unfair in the attention that they paid to his factory. The inspectors knew about Stewart's violent tendencies. When Stewart appeared at the entrance and screamed at the inspectors, they called the police. Stewart would not let them in. Even though his factory had been ordered to shut down, it was clearly operating. The San Leandro police treated the call as a routine matter. And how serious could a meat inspector dispute be? They thought, you know, it's just a meat inspector. I mean, they're just arguing about some seasoning or something, whatever. At the same time, Stewart stormed back into his factory and placed his own 911 call. He claimed that the inspectors were harassing him and trespassing on his property. The police also treated this call as a low priority. In the time Stewart had been waging war against the inspectors, he had installed a series of cameras all over the factory. Stewart's aim was to catch the inspectors trespassing on his property. With video evidence, he would be able to prove that he was being harassed. CCTV rolled as both Stewart and the inspectors faced off against one another. Both sides had called the police, who were yet to arrive. The inspectors wanted to shut down the factory, but Stewart was desperate to keep it open. Finally, the inspectors decided to enter anyway. And now the four inspectors walked into the factory, prepared to conduct their daily investigation. They were met by Stewart, and even though they knew he was furious, the inspectors were perturbed by how calm he was. He had stopped shouting and screaming. He watched them walk into the factory As they began their inspection, Stewart went into his office and the inspectors went about their business. They examined the clearly operating factory and began to work through the checklist of violations, preparing a survey of everything Stewart was doing wrong. Then the office door opened. Stewart burst onto the factory floor with a gun in his hand. He started firing, spraying bullets in the direction of the inspectors. Gene Hillary, Thomas Quadros, and Bill Sherlin were hit. They fell to the ground, dying. Earl Willis reacted faster. He ducked under the spray of bullets. With the sound of the gunshots echoing around the factory, Earl ran for the exit. His colleagues were hit, and there was nothing he could do to help them. He was a meat inspector, not a soldier. Earl ran out of the factory and searched desperately for safety. On the same street was a small bank. Earl moved as fast as he could toward the bank. The gunshots were still echoing in his ears, and Stewart chased him. Earl didn't dare look back over his shoulder. If he had looked back over his shoulder, he would have seen the looming figure of the Sausage King. Stewart was charging down the street, trying to catch the one inspector who had escaped his wrath. He aimed his gun and fired, trying to hit Earl. Stewart missed. As Earl reached the entrance to the bank and dashed inside, Stewart gave up the chase. He returned to his factory and to the three dying inspectors. Earl burst into the bank and begged them to phone the police. This time, the call was not treated as a low priority. San Leandro and the police force mobilized as quickly as they could and sped toward the sausage factory. Back inside, Stewart approached his victims. The camera still rolling. And rather than capturing the inspectors trespassing his property, they captured Stewart committing murder. The footage shows Stewart well back in the back to the three bodies. He stood over each one of them and calmly fired three bullets into each of their heads. The three inspectors were dead. It only took 5 minutes for the police to arrive, and the sirens blared and the tires screeched as they pulled into the factory. The doors to the police car slammed shut as the officers grabbed their service weapons, worried about what they were about to find. As they crept forward toward the factory, they found Stewart Alexander standing outside. The Sausage King held his hands above his head in the shadow of his factory and confessed to his crimes. He was unarmed. He was ready to be taken into custody. And he said, quote, "I'm the only one you're looking for," he told the officer. "Take me to jail." Wow. The court found Stewart guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder. This meant that he was eligible for the death penalty, and Stewart Alexander was sentenced to death by lethal injection. He spent the rest of his life on death row at the famous San Quentin prison. In the 4 years he had been in custody, he put on 80 pounds. The weight gain led to a string of health problems, and eventually these problems turned into a pulmonary embolism. The embolism killed Stewart on December 27th, 2005. The murders of the Sausage King made headlines around America. The events were turned into a television documentary, and today the factory has been closed down for good. It sits behind a bar with no traces of the past lingering in the building. The owner of the Washington Club, Loretta Rickward, knew Stewart Alexander since he was 7 or 8 years old. She remembered how the Sausage King smoked the Linguica sausage every Tuesday, how the smells and the fragrances carried over all over the town. "It was a great smell," she said. "I wish I had the recipe because people still ask about it." And the Sausage King might have died, as did his victims, but the town of San Leandro still remembers Stewart Alexander, even if they might like to forget him. And that, folks, is the story of Stewart Alexander, the Sausage King, and why you should probably always, always control your emotions and control yourself and try to get help if you have some issues. Everybody has issues, man, but get help. But as always, guys, man, you know, I take these breaks, but you know how it goes, man. You know, I try to come back every Friday morning at 7 a.m. is when I post these. That's when I see that a lot of you listen to it. But it is a podcast you can listen to whenever you want, and follow me on the social media, CFM_tweets and CFM podcast on Instagram. And I'm also on TikTok, but I don't do anything that has to do with the podcast. And as always, don't forget to like and subscribe. Follow me on the socials. And I will see you on the next smoke.